Hello, and welcome to this webcast of the Conceptual Framework Exposure Draft. My name is Elena Worla. Today I'm joined by Anne McGeachin, and both of us work on the Conceptual Framework project. The purpose of this webinar is to provide you with an overview of Chapters 1 and 2 of the Conceptual Framework Exposure Draft, which discuss the objective of financial reporting and qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. A couple of things before we start. You can download the slide pack by clicking on the Event Resources button on the left-hand side of your screen. Also, this webinar is not live, it is a recording, so we are not taking questions of the audience today. And finally, we'd like to remind you that the views we will be expressing today are our own and not necessarily those of the ISB or IFRS Foundation. This webinar is the penultimate in a series of 9 webinars that we are recording for people who are interested in the exposure draft of the proposed conceptual framework. 7 webinars have already been recorded. The first one provides a general overview of the conceptual framework, while other webinars look into more detail on specific topics covered in the exposure draft. These webinars can be found on the Conceptual Framework page of our website. We will provide details at the end of this webinar. Next week, we will be adding a webinar on the implications of the Conceptual Framework proposals for existing standards. We are often asked about this, so the webinar will explain both the general implications of the Conceptual Framework, what will, and importantly, will not change, and it will also have a specific case study that will explore how the proposed concepts for identifying, recognizing, and measuring liabilities could affect requirements for provisions, contingent liabilities, and contingent assets if the ISB were to review the existing standards, IS 37. But today we are looking at the changes proposed in the Conceptual Framework Exposure Draft to the chapters on the objective of financial reporting and qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. Anne, shall we start with a brief history of developing these chapters?
Yes, of course. These chapters, the material in these chapters was first discussed in the framework for the preparation and presentation of financial statements that the International Accounting Standards Committee issued in 1989. The material was then revised by the International Accounting Standards Board in 2010, as the result of a joint project with the US National Standards Setter, the Financial Accounting Standards Board. 2 new chapters describing the objective of financial reporting and the qualitative characteristics of useful financial information came into effect out of that project as soon as they were published, and they now form part of the ISB's existing conceptual framework. In 2012, the ISB restarted its work on the Conceptual Framework project. It's no longer conducting this project as a joint project with the FASB. However, the ISB is getting input from a broad range of national standard setters, including the FASB, through ASAF, the Accounting Standards Advisory Forum. When the ISB restarted its work on the Conceptual Framework project, it didn't propose to reconsider fundamentally these chapters because they'd only just recently been completed and had been through an extensive due process. However, although some respondents to the discussion paper that we issued agreed with this approach, many respondents stated that the ISB should reconsider one or more aspects of these chapters. Given these comments, the ISB is proposing some changes to these chapters, and today we'll discuss those changes in some detail. Just a quick note to say that the proposed changes to these chapters would make them diverge from the FASB's concept statement, which had been converged by the material that was issued in 2010. Nonetheless, the ISB thinks that the benefits of its proposed changes outweigh the disadvantages of divergence on the issues affected.
Before we look at the proposed changes to these chapters, let's just briefly have a look at the concepts that they currently describe. Chapter 1 sets the objective of general purpose financial reporting, which is to provide useful financial information to users of financial statements. Such information should be useful in making decisions about providing resources to the entity, which include decisions about buying, selling, or holding equity in debt instruments, and providing or settling loans and other forms of credit. Chapter 2 discusses what makes information useful. It states that for financial information to be useful, it must possess two fundamental qualitative characteristics: relevance and faithful representation. The conceptual framework explains that information is relevant if it is capable of making a difference in the decisions made by users, while faithful representation is achieved if financial information faithfully represents the phenomena it purports to represent. To be a perfectly faithful representation, a depiction would have three characteristics. It would be complete, neutral, and free from error. Of course, perfection is seldom if ever achievable, so the ISB's objective is to maximize those qualities to the extent possible. The usefulness of financial information is further enhanced if it is comparable, verifiable, timely, and understandable. When talking about comparability, we mean that financial information should be comparable with similar information about other entities and with similar information about the same entity across periods. Verifiability means that different knowledgeable and independent observers could reach consensus, although not necessarily a complete agreement, that a particular depiction is a faithful representation. Timeliness means having information available to decision makers in time to be capable of influencing their decision. And finally, financial information should be understandable to users who have a reasonable knowledge of business and economic activities. Useful financial reporting is also subject to a cost constraint. Reporting financial information imposes costs, and it is important that those costs are justified by the benefits of reporting that information. So these are the main concepts discussed in chapters 1 and 2. Now let's move on and talk about the changes proposed to these chapters. First, let's look at the changes proposed to the discussion of the objective of financial reporting. And the first proposed change is to give more prominence to the notion of stewardship in the conceptual framework. Why is the ISB doing it?
The original framework that was issued in 1989 referred to the notion of stewardship. However, in the changes in 2010, the term stewardship was removed from the conceptual framework. Instead, in the revised chapter issued in 2010 on the objective of financial reporting, the ISB described what the term encapsulated. So, when describing the objective of financial reporting, the existing conceptual framework refers to the assessment of the efficiency and effectiveness of management's use of the reporting entity's resources. This is what we think many people commonly call stewardship, even though the existing conceptual framework does not use that term. So, the existing conceptual framework states that providing information to help users assess the efficiency and effectiveness of a management's use of the reporting entity's resources is a necessary part of meeting the overall objective of financial reporting. However, it's clear from comments that we've received that this doesn't get the point over clearly enough that stewardship is important, and many people have thought that we've removed the idea of stewardship from the conceptual framework. Therefore, in the ED, the ISD proposes to clarify the discussion of the objective of financial reporting so there's a more prominent statement of the importance of providing information needed to assess management stewardship. And the ED proposes that this should be done by explaining that decisions by primary users about providing resources to the entity, that is, about buying, selling, or holding equity and debt instruments, and providing or settling loans and other form of credit, depend on the returns that they expect. Investors, lenders, and other creditors' expectations about the returns depend on their assessment of the amount, timing, and certainty for future net cash flows to the entity, and also their assessment of management stewardship of the entity's resources. Consequently, users need information to help them make both those assessments. Even though this may seem as if it's an additional requirement, The ISB thinks that giving more prominence to stewardship shouldn't result in a lot of new or different information being required. The ISB continues to believe that information needed to assess stewardship and information needed to assess the prospects for future net cash inflows is largely the same.
But some respondents to the 2013 discussion paper would like the ISB to go even further, that is to introduce stewardship as a separate objective of financial reporting. We are not proposing that in the exposure draft. Why is that?
Yes, the existing conceptual framework and the exposure draft both identify that providing information that's useful for resource allocations decisions is the objective of financial reporting. The ISB thinks that information about management stewardship is part of the information needed to make decisions about whether to buy, sell, or hold an investment, i.e. about resource allocation decisions. For example, information about stewardship would inform a decision to hold an investment and perhaps improve management, rather than to sell the investment. We think that if we introduce stewardship as an additional objective rather than as part of the support for the objective being information that's useful for resource allocation decisions, that that could add confusion to the framework.
Another question that we've been asked is, what is the difference between stewardship and accountability?
Well, the ISB thinks that stewardship and accountability are similar notions, and that the information needed to hold management to account and the information needed to help users assess management stewardship is essentially the same. The ISB considered whether to use the term accountability rather than the term stewardship, but decided that the term stewardship was more familiar to many of its stakeholders and would be unlikely to be misunderstood if the conceptual framework describes clearly what we mean by the term.
Right. The other aspect of Chapter 1 that some respondents of the conceptual framework discussion paper asked us to consider is the discussion of primary users. The comments on this topic were contradictory. Some respondents thought that in the existing conceptual framework, the primary user group is defined too narrowly and suggested that it should include other groups, for example, employees, customers, suppliers, regulators, or even public at large. On the other hand, we got comments that the primary user group is defined too broadly and that we should focus on existing holders of equity claims against the entity. So, in developing the existing conceptual framework, the ISB attempted to identify those users of financial statements who have the most critical and immediate need for the information in financial reports. It concluded that this group is wider than just existing shareholders. It includes potential investors, lenders, and other creditors, because for many potential investors, the only source of financial information about the entity is the financial report. And although some lenders, for example, rating agencies, can obtain information directly from the entity, most of them cannot. So many lenders and other creditors need the information provided by financial reports to make decisions about whether to provide credit to the entity. On the other hand, expanding the primary user group could result in financial statements that lack focus and could increase the length of those financial statements. Consequently, the ISB proposes no changes to the descriptions of the primary user group. Perhaps it is important to mention here that this focus on existing and potential investors, lenders, and other creditors doesn't prevent the reporting entity from including additional information that is most useful to a particular subset of primary users, for example, to existing ordinary shareholders. So now let's move on to the changes proposed to the chapter on qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. Perhaps the most talked about change to this chapter is the reintroduction of reference to prudence. In the 1989 framework, there was an explicit reference to prudence. It stated that deliberate understatement of assets or income or overstatement of liabilities or expenses is not permitted as it is inconsistent with neutrality. And we can see that in 2010, when this chapter was revised, the reference to prudence was removed. Why was it done?
A big problem in discussing the term prudence is that it means different things to different people. So in 2010, the ISB removed the term because it was being used by some to justify the deliberate understatement of assets and income or overstatement of liabilities. For example, the ISB wished to prevent entities manipulating profits by setting up excessive provisions in good years that could then be released to increase profit in bad years. The 2010 basis for conclusions explains that prudence in this sense is inconsistent with neutrality because it introduces bias into the financial statements.
So why is the ISB proposing to introduce an explicit reference to prudence now?
It's clear from the feedback that we've received on the removal of the term prudence in the 2010 revisions has been misinterpreted. The ISB has always supported the use of prudence in the sense of the need to be cautious when making judgments under conditions of uncertainty, and continues to do so. However, it seems that some have misinterpreted the removal of the term prudence to mean that the ISB does not acknowledge the need for caution. And some even go so far as to say that it means that we would support the production of financial statements that are imprudent. In order to counteract this misunderstanding, we are proposing to reintroduce the term prudence, defined as the need for caution when making judgments under conditions of uncertainty, back into the framework. We are hoping that reintroduction of the term defined in this way will help the ISB set rigorous standards that counteract any management bias. We also think it will help preparers, auditors, and regulators to counter that natural bias that management may have towards optimism. And we hope that it will generally reduce confusion about what we mean by prudence by having a very clear definition in the framework.
So what do we mean by prudence?
Well, as I said before, prudence means different things to different people. In the basis for conclusions on this ED, we distinguish between cautious prudence and asymmetric prudence. People may ask, what is the difference? So the difference is that cautious prudence is the need to be cautious when making judgments under conditions of uncertainty, but without being more cautious in judgments about gains than about judgments on losses. The exposure draft proposes the reintroduction of cautious prudence, and we think in this sense it supports neutrality. It means that assets and income are not overstated, and liabilities and expenses are not understated. Perhaps it's useful to emphasize that this does not prohibit recognition of unrealized gains, for example, if that information is useful. On the other hand, it does not allow for the understatement of assets and income or the overstatement of liabilities and expenses. So that would prevent the creation of cookie jar reserves that can then be released in the future.
So what about asymmetric prudence?
Asymmetric prudence is basically the idea that you recognize possible losses at an earlier stage than possible gains. There's a range of views on how to achieve such asymmetry and to what extent you should aim to do so. For example, some advocate of a form of prudence that would require more persuasive evidence to support the recognition of gains or assets than of losses or liabilities, or would support the selection of measurement bases that include losses on a more timely basis than gains, for example, historical costs with impairment. The exposure draft does not propose the introduction of asymmetric prudence because the ISB supports neutrality and does not think that the requirement for a systematic bias would always produce useful information. The ISB thinks that if a systematic bias were introduced towards the recognition of losses earlier than gains or in the choice of measurement basis, it would be necessary to decide when to apply that bias and how much bias is appropriate. And that would increase the subjectivity of financial statements and reduce comparability. The ISB also does not support systematically requiring the selection of cost-based measurements. The ISB thinks that in some cases, measuring assets and liabilities at current value, even if those current values need to be estimated, can provide useful information, for example, in the case of many financial instruments. In addition, we'd like to note that the ISB rejects some accounting treatments that some regard as following from asymmetric prudence. For example, the prohibition of the recognition of unrealized losses. The ISB thinks that in some circumstances, for example, for the measurement of many financial instruments, the recognition of unrealized gains provides the most relevant information to users of financial statements. The prohibition of the recognition of unrealized gains is also not supported by observable market prices. In some circumstances, measuring an asset or liability at an estimated current value, which may require the recognition of unrealized gains, will provide the most relevant information to users of financial statements. Finally, permitting an entity to measure assets at less than an unbiased estimate using the measurement basis selected for that asset, or to measure liabilities at more than such an unbiased estimate. Such an approach cannot result in relevant information and cannot provide a faithful representation.
So if the ISB rejects asymmetric prudence, does it mean that the exposure draft would preclude all accounting treatments that result in asymmetry?
Not necessarily.
But then if asymmetric accounting policies are selected, for example, for recognition of assets and liabilities, wouldn't that contradict neutrality?
Well, first let's consider what is neutrality. The existing and the proposed conceptual framework describes neutral depiction as without bias. It is not slanted, weighted, emphasized, de-emphasized, or otherwise manipulated to increase the possibility that information will be received favorably or unfavorably by users. The ISB thinks that not all asymmetry is inconsistent with this definition of neutrality. The selection of neutral accounting policies means selecting accounting policies in a manner that is not intended to increase the probability that the financial information will be received favorably or unfavorably by users. The key question when selecting accounting policies should be if they result in useful information. Hence, accounting policies that treat gains and losses asymmetrically could be selected in accordance with the proposals in the exposure draft if their selection is intended to result in relevant information that faithfully represents what it purports to represent. So, the selection of neutral accounting policies, contrary to fears sometimes expressed, does not require the ISB to set recognition criteria that treat assets in the same way as liabilities. And this can be seen, for example, in IAS 37, provisions, contingent liabilities and contingent assets, which adopts a different threshold for liabilities, more likely than not, but a virtually certain threshold for contingent assets. The proposals in the conceptual framework would neither require nor prohibit such asymmetry. If the ISB were to re-examine the treatment of these items, it would be looking to adopt a treatment or treatments that provide the most useful information. Also, neutrality does not prohibit impairment tests on assets measured at historical cost. Measurement at historical cost, including an impairment test, is consistent with neutrality if such a measurement basis is selected without bias. Neutrality, again, does not require an entity to recognize the value of the entire entity in the statement of financial position. The ED actually states that general purpose financial reports are not designed to show the value of a reporting entity. Similarly, selection of neutral accounting policies does not require the recognition of all assets and liabilities, and nor does it require that all assets and liabilities that are recognized are measured at fair value. Indeed, the proposals in the measurement chapter of the exposure draft, which were discussed in an earlier webcast, would not lead to such a requirement and are likely to result in a mixed measurement model.
Thank you, Anne, and I hope we've added some clarity to the notion of prudence. Moving on to another change proposed to the chapter on qualitative characteristics, the introduction of explicit reference to substance over form. The existing conceptual framework does not include an explicit reference to substance over form. It was removed when the conceptual framework was amended in 2010. The ISB did not identify substance over form as a separate aspect of a faithful representation because the ISB viewed it as redundant. The basis for conclusions on the 2010 amendments points out that accounting for something in accordance with its legal form cannot result in a faithful representation if its economic substance is different.
So why is the ISB proposing to reintroduce an explicit reference in the exposure draft?
Well, some respondents to the discussion paper expressed the view that the conceptual framework should make such explicit reference and not rely solely on the basis for conclusions. The ISB agrees that making that statement explicit would add clarity. Consequently, the exposure draft proposes that a faithful representation should provide information about the substance of an economic phenomenon instead of merely information about its legal form. However, we'd like to emphasize that in most cases, the legal form reflects the substance of a transaction. So considering the legal form is important for and would normally be the first step in understanding the substance of transaction.
Are there any other changes to the chapter on qualitative characteristics?
Well, we also received some comment letters asking for reintroduction of reliability as one of the qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. This term was removed in 2010, and the main reason for it was a lack of common understanding of the term reliability. In particular, many seem to equate reliability solely with information being verifiable or free from material error. In other words, having a tolerable level of measurement uncertainty. The ISB considers that it is unnecessary to reintroduce the term reliability as a label for the qualitative characteristic now called faithful representation. The responses to the discussion paper seem to confirm that many respondents still equate the word reliability solely with a tolerable level of measurement uncertainty, and not with a broader notion described in the pre-2010 framework. The ISB wishes to emphasize that main aspects of reliability as it was described in the pre-2010 framework are very similar to the description of faithful representation as it is proposed in the exposure draft. The exposure draft describes a perfectly faithful representation as complete, free from error, and neutral, and it also encompasses substance over form. The exposure draft also seeks to clarify the role of measurement uncertainty. Consistently with the existing conceptual framework, the exposure draft explains that an estimate might not provide relevant information if the level of uncertainty in the estimate is large. That is, if that measurement uncertainty, that is, it explains that measurement uncertainty is one factor that can make financial information less relevant. Hence, there is a trade-off between the level of measurement uncertainty and other factors that make information relevant. That trade-off is similar to the trade-off previously described as existing between relevance and reliability. For example, one piece of information might be of high interest to users of financial statements, but subject to high measurement uncertainty. Another piece of information about the same economic phenomenon may be of lower interest to users, but subject to lower measurement uncertainty. In such cases, judgment is needed to determine which piece of information is more relevant. The relevant chapters of the exposure draft also discuss the role of measurement uncertainty in decisions about recognition and measurement. The ISB thinks that this enhanced discussion of measurement uncertainty together with a discussion of the two fundamental qualitative characteristics of useful financial information, will help to explain the factors that enable users to rely on financial information to provide a faithful representation of what it purports to depict. In the ISB's view, this makes it unnecessary to reintroduce any further reference to reliability.
Why is measurement uncertainty discussed in terms of relevance rather than part of faithful representation?
Well, we think that it is possible to faithfully represent an estimate that is subject to a high level of measurement uncertainty if that estimate is clearly and accurately described, the nature of limitations of the estimation process is described, and no errors have been made in selecting and applying that process. However, just because we can faithfully represent that estimate, it doesn't mean that it will provide useful information. To be useful, the information must also be relevant. As I explained earlier, the exposure draft states that an estimate can provide relevant information even if it is subject to a high level of measurement uncertainty. However, in some situations, the level of uncertainty may be so high that the resulting information may have little relevance. That is, users will simply disregard the information provided by such estimates. Hence, the exposure draft clarifies that measurement uncertainty is one factor that can make financial information less relevant. So we have come to the end of this webinar, and I hope you have found it useful and that you will return next week to listen to the last webinar in this series. If you have missed the previous webinars, they remain on the ISB website for you to listen. In the meantime, you can find further information about the project on the Conceptual Framework project page on the ISB website. From that page, you will also be able to submit comments on the exposure draft or register to receive email alerts about the project. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye. Are we happy with that?
There's just one slide where I'm not sure we said the right thing.
The problem is that we have to re-record the whole thing. Which one?
Really? We can't. Now we can just edit, and I should have stopped at the time then. Let me find out where it was. It was prudence. It was. Rejects some accounting treatments that some regard as following from asymmetric prudence. The prohibition of the recognition is of unrealized gain, not unrealized losses. And then we talk about unrealized gains all the way through the following. That's on 13.
Okay. This one.
So that first sentence, that should say gains. But And I said losses. Is it not possible to do an insert? Oh, I really don't want to read through it all again. Can we ask Bob if there's anything we can do?
I know it. I've
Oh, no. Because it's only.
Yeah.
It must be less than halfway through.
Took us about half an hour to get it.
Can you run through to where it is, and then we'll see how long it'll... I presume, can we just... We don't need to do the bit before that, do we? Again.
You don't need to do everything again. But to do everything. Yeah. We can do.
Sorry, I should have stopped when I thought that was wrong. Oh, well, we can always go back and edit.
Yeah. We had that hope so many times before.
Have you had to re-record others?
Well, we normally had a run-through before. So, yeah, we tried to record one with Julia straight away. It didn't happen.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, we had to re-record it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
And we start again. Hello, and welcome to this webcast on the Conceptual Framework Exposure Draft. My name is Yelena Voyla. Today I'm joined by Anne McGeekin. Both of us work on the Conceptual Framework project. The purpose of this webinar is to provide you with an overview of Chapters 1 and 2 of the Conceptual Framework Exposure Draft, which discuss the objective of financial reporting and qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. A couple of things before we start. You can download the slide pack by clicking on the Event Resources button on the left-hand side of your screen. Also, this webinar is not live, it is a recording, so we are not taking questions of the audience today. Finally, we'd like to remind you that the views we will be expressing today are our own and not necessarily those of the ISB or IFRS Foundation. This webinar is the penultimate in a series of 9 webinars that we are recording for people who are interested in the exposure draft of the proposed new conceptual framework. 7 webinars have already been recorded. The first one provides a general overview of the conceptual framework, while other webinars look into more detail on specific topics covered in the exposure draft. These webinars can be found on the conceptual framework page of our website. We will provide details at the end of this webinar. Next week, we will be adding a webinar on the implications of the conceptual framework proposals for existing standards. We are often asked about this, so the webinar will explain both the general implications of the conceptual framework, what will and importantly will not change. And it will also have a specific case study that will explore how the proposed concepts for identifying, recognizing, and measuring liabilities could affect requirements for provisions, contingent liabilities, and contingent assets if the ISB were to review the existing standard, IS 37. But today we are looking at the changes proposed in the Conceptual Framework Exposure Draft to the chapters on the objective of financial reporting and qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. Anne, shall we start with a brief history of developing these chapters?
Yes, sure. The framework for the preparation and presentation of financial statements, which the International Accounting Standards Committee originally issued in 1989, discuss the objective of general purpose financial reporting and the qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. This material was revised by the International Accounting Standards Board in 2010 as the result of a joint project with the US National Standards Setter, the Financial Accounting Standards Board. 2 new chapters describing the objective of financial reporting and the qualitative characteristics of useful financial information came into effect as soon as they were published and now form a part of the ISB's existing conceptual framework. In 2012, the IASB restarted its work on the conceptual framework project. It is no longer conducting this project as a joint project with the FASB. However, the ISB is getting input from a broad range of national standards setters, including the FASB, through ASAF, the Accounting Standards Advisory Forum. When the ISB restarted its work on the Conceptual Framework project, it did not propose to reconsider fundamentally these chapters because they'd only recently been completed and had been through extensive due process. However, some respondents to the discussion paper disagreed with this approach. Many respondents stated that the ISB should reconsider one or more aspects of these chapters. In the light of these comments, the ISB is proposing some changes to these chapters, and today we'll discuss those changes in more detail. Just a quick note, The proposed changes to these chapters would make them diverge from the FASB's concept statement that was revised at the same time that the ISB issued its new chapters in 2010. The ISB thinks that the benefits of its proposed changes outweigh the disadvantages of divergence on the issues affected.
So, before we look at the proposed changes to these chapters, let's have a look at the concept that they currently describe. Chapter 1 sets the objective of general purpose financial reporting, which is to provide useful financial information to users of financial statements. Such information should be useful in making decisions about providing resources to the entity, which include decisions about buying, selling, or holding equity and debt instruments, and providing or settling loans and other forms of credit. Chapter 2 discusses what makes information useful. It states that for information to be useful, it must possess two fundamental qualitative characteristics: relevance and faithful representation. The conceptual framework explains that information is relevant if it is capable of making a difference in the decisions made by users, while faithful representation is achieved if financial information faithfully represents the phenomena it purports to represent. To be a perfectly faithful representation, a depiction would have three characteristics. It would be complete, neutral, and free from error. Of course, perfection is seldom, if ever, achievable, so the ISB's objective is to maximize those qualities to the extent possible. The usefulness of financial information is further enhanced if it is comparable, verifiable, timely, and understandable. When talking about comparability, we mean that financial information should be comparable with similar information about other entities and with similar information about the same entity across periods. Verifiability means that different knowledgeable and independent observers could reach consensus, although not necessarily a complete agreement, that a particular depiction is a faithful representation. Timeliness means having information available to decision makers in time to be capable of influencing their decision. And finally, financial information should be understandable to users who have reasonable knowledge of business and economic activities. Also, useful financial reporting is subject to a cost constraint. Reporting financial information imposes costs, and it is important that those costs are justified by the benefits of reporting that information. So these are the main concepts discussed in chapters 1 and 2. Now let's move on and talk about changes proposed to these chapters. First, let's look at the changes proposed to the discussion of the objective of financial reporting. And the first proposed change is to give more prominence to the notion of stewardship in the conceptual framework. Why is the ISB doing it?
The framework that was originally issued in 1989 referred to the notion of stewardship, but in 2010, the term stewardship was removed from the conceptual framework. Instead, in the revised chapter on the objective of financial reporting, the ISB described what this term encapsulated. When describing the objective of financial reporting, the existing conceptual framework refers to the assessment of the efficiency and effectiveness of management's use of the reporting entity's resources. This is commonly called stewardship, although the existing conceptual framework does not use that word. The existing conceptual framework states that providing information to help users assess the efficiency and effectiveness of management's use of the reporting entity's resources is a necessary part of meeting the overall objective of financial reporting. However, it's clear from the feedback that we've received that this point is not made clearly enough, and many people have misinterpreted the chapter as having removed the need to think about stewardship. Therefore, the ISB proposes in the exposure draft to clarify the discussion of the objective of financial reporting so that there's a more prominent statement of the importance of providing information needed to assess management stewardship. This is done by explaining that decisions by primary users about providing resources to the entity, that is about buying, selling, or holding equity and debt instruments, and providing or settling loans and other forms of credit, depend on the returns that they expect. Investors, lenders, and other creditors' expectations about returns depend on their assessment of the amount, timing, and uncertainty of future net cash inflows to the entity, and their assessment of management stewardship of the entity's resources. Consequently, users need information to help them make both these assessments. Even though this may seem as an additional requirement, the ISB thinks that giving more prominence to stewardship shouldn't result in a lot of new or different information being required. We believe that the information needed to assess stewardship and information needed to assess the prospects for future net cash flows is largely the same.
But some respondents to the 2013 discussion paper would like the ISB to go even further, that is to introduce stewardship as a separate objective of financial reporting. We are not proposing that in the exposure draft. Why is that?
Yes, the existing conceptual framework and the exposure draft identify as the objective of financial reporting, providing information that is useful for resource allocation decisions. The ISB thinks that information about management stewardship is part of the information needed to make decisions about whether to buy, sell, or hold an investment, i.e. a resource allocation decisions. For example, information about stewardship would inform a decision to hold an investment and perhaps improve management rather than to sell the investment. We think that introducing stewardship as a separate additional objective of financial reporting would be confusing.
Another question that we've been asked is, what is the difference between stewardship and accountability?
Well, the ISB thinks that stewardship and accountability are similar notions, and that the information needed to hold management to account and the information needed to help users assess management stewardship is the same. The ISB considered whether to use the term accountability rather than the term stewardship, but decided that the term stewardship was more familiar to many of its stakeholders, and that it would be unlikely to be misunderstood if the conceptual framework describes clearly what is meant by the term.
Thank you, Anne. So the other aspect of Chapter 1 that some respondents to the conceptual framework discussion paper asked us to consider is the discussion of primary users. The comments on this topic were contradictory. Some respondents thought that in the existing conceptual framework, the primary user group is defined too narrowly and suggested that it should include other groups, for example, employees, customers, suppliers, regulators, or even public at large. On the other hand, we've got comments that the primary user group is defined too broadly and that we should focus on existing holders of equity claims against the entity. In developing the existing conceptual framework, the ISB attempted to identify those users of financial statements who have the most critical and immediate need for the information in financial reports. It concluded that this group is wider than just existing shareholders. It includes potential investors, lenders, and other creditors, because for many potential investors, the only source of financial information about the entity is the financial report. And although some lenders, for example, rating agencies, can obtain information directly from the entity, most of them cannot. Hence, many lenders and other creditors need the information provided by the financial report to make decisions about whether to provide credit to the entity. On the other hand, expanding the primary user group could result in financial statements that lack focus and would increase the length of those financial statements. Consequently, the ISB proposes no changes to the description of the primary user group. Perhaps it is important to mention here that this focus on existing and potential investors, lenders, and other creditors doesn't prevent the reporting entity from including additional information that is most useful to a particular subset of primary users, for example, existing ordinary shareholders. And now let's move on to changes proposed to the chapter on qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. Perhaps the most talked about change to this chapter is reintroduction of reference to prudence. 1989 framework included an explicit reference to prudence. It stated that deliberate understatement of assets or income or overstatement of liabilities or expenses is not permitted as it is inconsistent with neutrality. And we can see that in 2010, when this chapter was revised, the reference to prudence was removed. Why was it done?
A big problem in discussing the term prudence is that it means different things to different people. The ISB removed the term in 2010 because it was being used by some to justify the deliberate understatement of assets and income and overstatement of liabilities. For example, the ISB wished to prevent entities manipulating profits by setting up excessive provisions in good years that could then be released to increase profit in bad years. The 2010 basis for conclusions explains that prudence in this sense is inconsistent with neutrality because it introduces a bias.
So why is the ISB proposing to reintroduce an explicit reference to prudence now?
It's clear from the feedback that we've received that the removal of the term prudence has been misinterpreted. The ISB has always supported the use of prudence in the sense of the need to be cautious when making judgments under conditions of uncertainty, and continues to do so. However, it was clear that some have misinterpreted the removal of the term prudence to mean that the ISB does not think that there is any need for such caution, and even at the extreme that it would support financial statements that could be regarded as imprudent. Hence, it proposes to reintroduce the term prudence, defined clearly in the sense of a need to be cautious when making judgments under conditions of uncertainty. The ISB is hoping that reintroduction of the term will help it set rigorous standards that counteract any management bias. It should also help preparers, auditors, and regulators counter the natural bias that management may have towards optimism. And by introducing a clear definition, we hope it will generally reduce confusion about what prudence means.
So what does prudence mean?
Well, as I mentioned before, prudence means different things to different people. In the basis for conclusions in this ED, we try to clarify what we mean by prudence by distinguishing between cautious prudence and asymmetric prudence. So, cautious prudence is the need to be cautious when making judgments under conditions of uncertainty, but without being more cautious in judgments on gains than in judgments on losses. The exposure draft proposes the reintroduction of cautious prudence, and we think that in this sense, prudence supports neutrality. It means that assets and income are not overstated, and liabilities and expenses are not understated. Perhaps it's useful to emphasize that this does not prohibit recognition of unrealized gains if that information is useful. On the other hand, it does not allow for the understatement of assets and income or the overstatement of liabilities and expenses, so it would prevent the creation of cookie jar reserves.
What about asymmetric prudence?
Asymmetric prudence is associated with recognizing possible losses at an earlier stage than possible gains. There's a range of views on how to achieve such asymmetry and to what extent it should be achieved. For example, some advocate a form of prudence that would require more persuasive evidence to support the recognition of gains or assets than of losses or liabilities, or they support the selection of measurement bases that include losses on a more timely basis than gains, for example, historical cost with impairment. The exposure draft does not propose the introduction of asymmetric prudence because the ISB supports neutrality, does not think that the requirement for a systematic bias would always produce useful financial information. The ISB thinks that if a systematic bias were introduced towards the recognition of losses earlier than gains or in the choice of measurement basis, it would be necessary to decide when to apply that bias and how much bias is appropriate. That would increase the subjectivity of financial statements and reduce comparability. The ISB also does not support systematically requiring the selection of cost-based measurements. The ISB thinks that in some cases, measuring assets and liabilities at current value, even if those current values need to be estimated, can provide useful information, for example, in the case of many financial instruments. In addition, we'd like to note that the ISB rejects some accounting treatments that some regard as following from asymmetric prudence. For example, the prohibition of the recognition of unrealized gains. The ISB thinks that in some circumstances, for example, the measurement of financial instruments, the recognition of unrealized gains provides the most relevant information to users of financial statements. Also, the prohibition of the recognition of unrealized gains is not supported by observable market prices. In some circumstances, measuring an asset or liability at an estimated current value, which may require the recognition of unrealized gains, will provide the most relevant information to users of financial statements. Finally, permitting an entity to measure assets at less than an unbiased estimate using the measurement basis selected for that asset, or to measure liabilities at more than such an unbiased estimate. Such an approach cannot result in relevant information and cannot provide a faithful representation.
So, if the ISB rejects asymmetric prudence, does it mean that the exposure draft would preclude all accounting treatments that result in asymmetry?
Not necessarily.
But if asymmetric accounting policies are selected, for example, for recognition of assets and liabilities, wouldn't that contradict neutrality?
Well, first let's consider what neutrality means. The existing and proposed conceptual framework describes neutral depiction as without bias. It is not slanted, weighted, emphasized, de-emphasized, or otherwise manipulated to increase the possibility that information will be received favorably or unfavorably by users. The ISB thinks that not all asymmetry is inconsistent with neutrality defined in that way. The selection of neutral accounting policies means selecting accounting policies in a manner that's not intended to increase the probability that financial information will be received favorably or unfavorably. The key question when selecting accounting policies should be if they result in useful information. Hence, accounting policies that treat gains and losses asymmetrically could be selected in accordance with the proposals in the exposure draft if their selection is intended to result in relevant information that faithfully represents what it purports to represent. So, the selection of neutral accounting policies, contrary to fears sometimes expressed, does not require the ISB to set recognition criteria that treat assets in the same way as liabilities. And this can be seen currently in IAS 37, Provisions, Contingent Liabilities and Contingent Assets, which adopts a different threshold, more likely than not, for contingent liabilities than the virtually certain threshold for contingent assets. The proposals in the exposure draft would neither require nor prohibit such asymmetry. If the ISB were to re-examine the treatment of these items, it would focus on the need to adopt a treatment or treatments that would provide the most useful information. Neutrality also does not prohibit impairment tests on assets measured at historical cost. Measurement at historical cost, including an impairment test, is consistent with neutrality if such a measurement basis is selected without bias. Neutrality also does not require an entity to recognize the value of the entire entity in the statement of financial position. The ED actually states that general purpose financial reports are not designed to show the value of a reporting entity. Similarly, selection of neutral accounting policies does not require the recognition of all assets and liabilities, nor does it require that all assets and liabilities are measured at fair value. Indeed, the proposals in the measurement chapter of the ED which were discussed in an earlier webcast, would not lead to such a requirement and are likely to result in a mixed measurement model.
Thank you, Anne. I hope we've added some clarity to the notion of prudence. Now, moving on to another change proposed to the chapter on qualitative characteristics, reintroduction of explicit reference to substance over form. The existing conceptual framework doesn't include an explicit reference to substance over form. It was removed when the conceptual framework was amended in 2010. The ISB did not identify substance over form as a separate aspect of faithful representation because the ISB viewed it as redundant. The basis for conclusions on the amendments points out that accounting for something in accordance with its legal form cannot result in a faithful representation if its economic substance is different.
So why is the ISB proposing to reintroduce an explicit reference in the exposure draft?
Well, some respondents to the discussion paper expressed the view that the conceptual framework should make such explicit reference and not solely rely on the basis for conclusions. The ISB agrees that making this statement explicit would add clarity. Consequently, the exposure draft proposes that a faithful representation should provide information about the substance of an economic phenomenon instead of merely information about its legal form. However, we'd like to emphasize here that in most cases, the legal form reflects the substance of a transaction. So considering the legal form is important for and would normally be the first step in understanding the substance of the transaction.
Are there any other changes to the chapter on qualitative characteristics?
Well, we also received some comment letters asking for reintroduction of reliability as one of the qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. This term was removed in 2010, and the main reason for it was a lack of common understanding of the term reliability. In particular, many seem to equate it solely with information being verifiable or free from material error, or in other words, having a tolerable level of measurement uncertainty. The ISB considers that it is unnecessary to reintroduce the term reliability as a label for the qualitative characteristic now called faithful representation. The responses to the discussion paper seem to confirm that many respondents still equate the word reliability solely with a tolerable level of measurement uncertainty and not with a broader notion described in the pre-2010 framework. The ISB wishes to emphasize that main aspects of reliability, as it was described in the pre-2010 framework, are very similar to the description of faithful representation proposed in the exposure draft. The exposure draft describes a perfectly faithful representation as complete, free from error, and neutral, and it also encompasses substance over form. The exposure draft also seeks to clarify the role of measurement uncertainty. Consistently with the existing conceptual framework, the exposure draft explains that an estimate might not provide relevant information if the level of uncertainty in that estimate is large. That is, that measurement uncertainty is one factor that can make financial information less relevant. Hence, there is a trade-off between the level of measurement uncertainty and other factors that make information relevant. That trade-off is similar to the trade-off previously described as existing between relevance and reliability. For example, one piece of information may be of high interest to users of financial statements, but subject to high measurement uncertainty. Another piece of information about the same economic phenomenon may be of lower interest to users, but subject to lower measurement uncertainty. In such cases, judgment is needed to determine which piece of information is more relevant. Also, relevant chapters of the exposure draft discuss the role of measurement uncertainty in decisions about recognition and measurement. The ISB thinks that the enhanced discussion of measurement uncertainty, together with the discussion of the two fundamental qualitative characteristics of useful financial information, will help to explain the factors that enable users to rely on financial information to provide a faithful representation of what it purports to depict. In the ISB's view, this makes it unnecessary to reintroduce any further reference to reliability.
Why is measurement uncertainty discussed in terms of relevance rather than faithful representation?
Well, we think that it is possible to faithfully represent an estimate that is subject to high level of measurement uncertainty if that estimate is clearly and accurately described and the nature and limitation of the estimation process are described and no errors have been made in selecting and applying that process. However, just because that estimate is faithfully represented doesn't mean that it will provide useful information. To be useful, the information must also be relevant. As I explained earlier, the exposure draft states that an estimate can provide relevant information, even if it is subject to a high level of measurement uncertainty. However, in some situations, the level of uncertainty may be so high that the resulting information may have little relevance. That is, users will simply disregard that information. Hence, the exposure draft clarifies that measurement uncertainty is one factor that can make financial information less relevant. So, we have come to the end of this webinar. Anne and I hope you have found it useful and that you will return next week to listen to the last webinar in this series. If you've missed the previous webinars, they remain on the ISB website for you to listen. In the meantime, you can find further information about the project on the Conceptual Framework Project page on the ISB website. From that page, you will also be able to submit comments on the exposure draft or register to receive email alerts about the project. Thank you very much for listening and goodbye.
Absolutely.